What's up, everybody? It's Isaac with the intro to the intro, which you know what that means. I've got a special treat for you. Today, it's the return of my longest, oldest friend since birthing Isaac Weissnot back in 2011. It's Jay Dyer. That's right. The last time we linked up was June 2024 when we did a lecture together in Las Vegas with Jim Bob and Jimmy Hanshaw. And I negotiated with Jay to squeeze an hour in out of his very busy schedule. He's going to drop his insights into the Epstein Files. Very important show here. We're going to discuss ideas like, hey, are the Epstein Files possibly a psyop through QAnon? Jay gives his ideas on the definition of beef jerky, how the Rothschilds and Rockefellers are coordinating all of this stuff, possibly. We talk a little bit about Under the Silver Lake, which, by the way, don't forget to watch Under the Silver Lake. It's going to be coming soon. It should be the next episode, if I can get my stuff together here. We talk about Steve Bannon interviews. We talk about Epstein's occult books. We talk about Carol Quigley book recommendations as we try to navigate understanding the geopolitical atmosphere of how this whole thing happened. It's going to be a very good show today. Also, quick housekeeping before we get into the interview. Watch the video version of this interview. You can go with the ad-free, uncensored version on Tier 2 of Patreon or VIP section. Or, if you want to hit that free feed version, go to YouTube at Occult Symbolism. And be sure to subscribe and hit the bell for all notifications to help me get to 100,000. I want to get to 100,000 by the end of the year so I can run with the big dogs. Jay's at like 200,000. Come on. Let's go. I'll also have links in the show notes for all the places you can follow Jay. And be sure to pick up his Esoteric Hollywood series from jaysanalysis.com. We're going to talk about Esoteric Hollywood 3, his latest book, towards the end of the show. He makes some fascinating connections and findings to silent movie era stuff with Aleister Crowley. It's crazy. So without further ado, here's Jay Dyer. Today we've got the king of guest appearances on Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. You guys know him from his blog and podcast at jaysanalysis.com, as well as his massive YouTube channel. He's the writer for The Sam Hyde Show, author of several books, co-host of The Hollywood Decoded Show, debate champion, host on InfoWars. I don't know if I can say that. He found time in his busy schedule to join us today. We're joined by the unstoppable Jay Dyer. Jay Dyer, how you doing, man?
What's up, Isaac? Glad to be back with you. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a couple years.
In 2 years, I think. Yeah, exactly. So glad to be back with you, and always love chopping it up.
Yeah, you're, as the listeners probably know, you're one of the G's that I trust and go back with since I started doing this. You were doing it before me, and I've watched you from a distance ascend to the stars. Hopefully I can get you back on in the future, man. You're blowing up so
hard. Maybe a little bit of a third of the way. I don't know about that.
I don't know. You're being modest. Yeah, but yeah, you're doing great, man. You're doing good work. But I wanted to get you on because the last time I had you on was in 2024. And I mean, so much has changed since then. David Lynch is dead now, and the Epstein Files is obviously the red hot topic that we all can't stop talking about. And I know you are one of the more well-educated on the Epstein Files folks that I know. And I think last time we talked a little tiny bit about the realm of the truther. And, you know, I'm trying to, and this is, we were talking about before the show, I'm going through some changes here, and I'm trying to like embrace various conspiracy theorists for what they're saying, because I tend to dismiss some of the ideas a little prematurely. And that's what something I've learned about myself from the Epstein Files. And we'll kind of dabble around that, but I wanted to get you going and riffing on the Epstein Files, because these files are cryptic and not so cryptic at the same time. Right. And it seems to be proving the most outlandish conspiracies that we've been talking about for all these years of pizza and Wayfair and like crazy stuff. And I feel like that's what we're looking at, is the truth being revealed to us. What do you make of this whole thing?
It is a big vindication. I remember in 2004, it was the first book I read on ritual abuse. And it was a Catholic journalist that wrote a book called Lucifer's Lodge by William Kennedy, about ritual abuse inside the Roman Catholic world. And then I read subsequently several books back in the 2000s on that subject. Jamie got me to read back in about 2018 or so, somewhere in there, Kurt Barker's book on this stuff. of course, I've read Kathy Wood's book over the years. So there's a lot of these types of books that have been out there, credible, some less credible. And, you know, it certainly makes sense why people would have been kind of skeptical about some of the crazier elements of it. But there were some things that seemed to be fairly substantial. You did have the famous cases, I'm sure we're all aware of, like the Finders. We know about, you know, Saville coming out. We know about serial killers and the, you know, things that they were into that we've covered on podcast. You had Elm Guest House, that's very similar to the Epstein operation. You had Operation Midnight Climax for the CIA using MKUltra and prostitutes. Again, another connection to kind of sex rings. You have, Paul Bonacci and Michael Aquino and the Presidio stuff. We keep having so many of these cases where over the years, Franklin cover up, obviously, with Nick Bryant, which I'll be doing a show with Nick Bryant tomorrow. But like, we know that there's all these cases, and yet it would still be kind of denied in the mainstream. You know what I mean? Like, and even in the conspiracy world, it's kind of seen as still fringe. And I guess just what's the craziest part is that, yeah, it's largely all true. I mean, obviously not everything is true, but I'm still not a QAnon fan. I've always thought QAnon stuff was like disinformation and a distraction, a deflection. But I think, you know, being a person who has argued for the reality of ritual abuse and cults. And another thing I remember that was really formative for this idea was when I watched Ted Gunderson's lectures back when it was Google Video. Everybody remembers Google Video, you know, prior to YouTube. And Ted Gunderson was the, you know, California FBI guy who was investigating the McMartin preschool case. And of course, he claimed there was satanic ritual abuse. There was tunnels, you know, all this outlandish stuff that so it seemed. And lo and behold, when the FBI declassified the Finder stuff, and they declassified then after that the McMartin preschool stuff, turns out there's tunnels. So, I mean, it does make sense why the elite would have sort of underground facilities and that kind of stuff. Sure, I've never thought that wasn't true. Underground bases do exist. That's a topic we've covered for 10 years. And we always try to stick to what's real and what you can demonstrate. People want to speculate, that's fine. But, you know, when it comes to like underground bases and that kind of stuff, people go crazy with it. Oh, there's an alien in an underground base and a general went down there and he saw the clones. And I mean, I don't believe in those things, but I do think that there are elite cult networks that work to do things underground and, you know, on the down low, especially when it comes to like the sexual blackmail and the trafficking and all that. All those things are now confirmed. They're 100% true. But I also want to add that, you know, it's not just the sex stuff, and we can go into the blackmail operations and sex espionage, because I've actually spent quite a bit of time the last couple of years going pretty deep into that. Myself went to a bunch of brothels just to test it out. No, I'm just joking. No, but I'm saying I got a bunch of nerd books that I read on from writers and historians on the history of like how that blackmail honey trap stuff has worked throughout time. Yeah. Anyway, long story short, it's also important that like it's the highest levels of government and it's international. You know, if you look at Epstein's operation, and I've been going hardcore on Epstein since the day it dropped. You know, I think I streamed like 30 hours last week on Epstein stuff. Every single day it was like new. Every time you would refresh Twitter, it was like a mind-blowing news story that 10 years ago would have been the news story for a month. It's like every minute on Twitter is another one of these, you know, emails or whatever. So right. We've been following a hardcore. And again, you're correct. It does kind of indicate, I don't know if it's 100%, but a lot of the coded language, you know, a lot of the trafficking is all confirmed. But also, it's international and it's the highest levels of government, finance, celebrities, et cetera. It's everything that we've talked about. Last time I was on with Alex, I said my talk for the fourth hour was, Jeffrey Epstein is the real Illuminati. I don't know how to say it better than that.
Yeah, that's well
said. I mean, he's not the top of the pyramid, but he's like up there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I was listening to, man, where were you at? Dude, you've been everywhere lately. Holy crap. I don't know how you're getting enough sleep. Was it Redacted? You're on one of these shows. I was watching it.
Times, yeah.
Yeah. And you guys were talking about it and how the truth is that Epstein probably isn't the top of the pyramid. There's probably, I mean, would it be fair to say that you think there could be several Epsteins or even higher level Epsteins? I mean, because in my head, I think the normies, if they even pay attention to this Epstein stuff, they're probably going to walk away with Yeah, but they got the bad guy. He's dead and everything's fine now. But knowing how this works, like these sort of like, you know, the Russian dolls, the shells within the shells, like I imagine there's multiple Epsteins out there, multiple ops running. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't doubt that. I mean, I don't know who those people are, of course, but you know, when at the same publisher as Whitney Webb's book, and when Whitney's book came out, you know, I read it and was impressed because it's a lot of good research. And most of her analysis has now been vindicated. And she talked quite extensively about, you know, Robert Maxwell being the sort of British intelligence and Mossad frontispiece that then brings in Epstein through Ghislaine, his daughter. And that was confirmed pretty much. I mean, assuming that Jeffrey Epstein's telling the right history on it, when he put that, when there was the email where he explained the death of Robert, and he says that Robert was trying to blackmail the Mossad for £400 million, and at the same time appointing himself to also be an attaché to the Soviets. And then the Soviets believed that he was a double, that he was playing both sides, right? So there's this double agent aspect going on where he's trying to play both sides in the Cold War. But Whitney said that the whole publishing empire that Maxwell set up was a front for the Rothschilds. And I would say that has all pretty much been vindicated according to many of these emails where, you know, Epstein's basically saying, I'm an attaché, a legate for the Rothschilds. There's at least two that say that. There's other emails where he basically has these, you know, substantial $25 million deals with them. And, you know, I thought about it and I thought, well, I've got these biographies on the Rothschilds I've read years ago. So I went back and pulled out my old Morton Rothschilds biography. And lo and behold, if you go back to the famous Waterloo story, they were using advanced intelligence as to what would happen at the victory of the Battle of Waterloo. And he went back and he used that advanced intelligence to buy up the stock market as it crashed, right? Mm. Lo and behold, Epstein's doing the same thing, right? He says that when we go into Greece, the markets are going to tank. We can buy up Greece. He's saying that to Ariana de Rothschild. He says the same thing about Ukraine. Everybody's already forgotten the Somalia email. He said, we're going to go in to Somalia, cause chaos, buy it all up through the war and the conflict. We'll make zillions. And then by implication, other negative effects of people displacement, shall we say. So you see Epstein involved in that. You see him commenting extensively on the bailouts from, you know, 15 years ago, the Greek bailouts, European bailouts. That was all to kind of buy out and buy up Greece, what Max Kaiser back in the day called a fire sale for Greece. All that's confirmed, and he had his hand in that. He's in Ukraine a month before Zelensky comes into power. And then Zelensky's texting and saying, I need help with Ukraine. Get me Epstein to help me consult. Literally asking for Epstein to help him consult. I mean, that I just want to point out that, like, the international scope of Spectre here, I mean, this is literally Christoph Waltz and Spectre playing Blofeld when Bond goes in to Italy and it's like the Club of Rome and he sneaks in there and you see that shady little shadow character over there and it's like, sir, this year human trafficking is up 50%. Yes, sir, we've made $14 billion more dollars from money laundering this year. It's like a criminal business report at a giant table. It's awesome, you know, movie wise, but I'm thinking that's exactly Epstein. Now, is he at the top of the pyramid? Well, he's up there because, as we learned from this amazing Bannon interview, and by the way, wow, Bannon has come out to be a pretty nasty character. I think you were kind of onto that one a long time ago. Props to you. Yeah, for but that.
Well, and I do want to insert my situation of what I'm going through mentally here is because, as my listeners know, I did like a full 3-hour explanation of who I am and my background, and I would classify myself as like a moderate liberal, mm-hmm. but not like go DNC. Like I'm not like I don't endorse Democrats because mm-hmm. I think they're just as bad. And from the files, we know that that's the truth now.
Yeah.
So I don't have like much fanfare for conservative thought. So like a guy like Steve Bannon, I immediately like don't trust him right sure. off the bat. Same with Donald Trump, right? Like I've been very openly vocal mm-hmm. that I don't trust Donald Trump from the beginning because I'm just not a conservative guy. And that's fine. I always say like almost all of my friends are Trumpers. In fact, just this weekend, I was discussing my opinions about it, and that's fine. I don't hold it against people who like conservatives. I live in Utah, which is the most conservative state in the union. It's fine. I have this distrust. I have what, you know, the Trump derangement syndrome, as they say. And the same would extend to Steve Bannon. Like, I also never trusted that guy. And I haven't seen the full interviews that he has with Epstein. I knew that they existed. I don't know if they were part of the Epstein file drop or not.
They were.
But
I think so.
And I'm like you, dude. Every time I refresh or just get on social media, I mean, I'll scroll for 5 seconds and be like, holy crap, I guess I've got work to do. There's this thing that's proven right from 10 years ago. And it's kind of maddening, to be honest.
It is crazy. No, but real quick, just with Epstein, what I was getting at was just that. So what he says in the interview with Bannon is, I was brought into Trilateral by the Kissinger circles to be the legate attaché for David Rockefeller. So they made him at age 30 part of the steering committee of Trilateral, which, if you guys don't recall, that was specifically created out of the CFR by Kissinger and Rockefeller for Brzezinski. So there you have this like higher level steering committee, kind of like Bilderberg or whatever. And he's right there with Rockefeller. And that what that shows us is, if you remember, there was an article that came out, I want to say the New York Times, maybe like 8 years ago, but it said that the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds had united their financial empires about 8 years ago. And that, again, kind of shows that it's the same with Jeff Stein McGeoffrey, as I said, because he's this legate attaché directly underneath David Rockefeller, but he's also in the emails, I represent the Rothschilds. You know, he says this to Peter Thiel. So this is not restricted to one nation state. If you think about the Western power block or the Atlantis's power block and the Five Eyes intelligence sharing, you know, stuff that goes on, that's exactly what Whitney Webb said. I've always thought that was correct. Alex says the same thing. He was a consultant, high-level political person above the CIA because he's working directly at Trilateral Commission. That's above like just normal CIA operative people. He's very high up, maybe not necessarily at the top of the pyramid, because there's some emails kind of indicating that he's taking orders at times too. But you know, when you listen to the I don't know if you heard the conversation that he has that was recorded between him and Ehud Barak, the former prime minister of Israel, who visited, by the way, his New York place over a dozen times. He's explaining to him what, for example, Silicon Valley is, who Peter Thiel is, what Palantir is, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And they want to bring him on board with their project. So he's kind of a consultant. He's an organized crime fixer. I think my opinion is that, looking at all this, and he's more of like a PhD in criminal operations. He's not so much a brilliant philosopher like he wants to come off in that interview. If you watch the Bannon interview, it's really bizarre because significant portions of it touch on sort of Kabbalistic subjects. So it's almost like he had a fascination or an interest perhaps with Kabbalah. He thinks that all reality is mathematics, sort of Pythagoreanism type stuff. He thinks consciousness is produced from the mind and it's math. It's real out there, weird stuff that Epstein was into. But he lays that all out. And then somebody, one of my friends just yesterday, pointed out that there's a book list, and he had about 5 occult books that he had purchased, like his Amazon list or something. And one of those was one of the Crowley texts on sex, magic, and tantra. So I think he was interested in a lot of these subjects, Kabbalah, you know, Crowleyan ideas, tantra. I think he even had something like holy grail, something ridiculous on there too, like you know, alternative history type stuff too on there. But yeah, he's an organized crime fixer, Blofeld person, but not at the tip top of the pyramid. Because remember, he's brought up kind of out of nowhere into the Barr School, OSS, Donald Barr, right? And then he goes into Bear Stearns. He's placed there in the Wall Street domain, as Whitney points out, which is, I think, a really telling thing. His partner gets in trouble for insider trading, but he doesn't. And so then he just kind of goes up the ladder, and eventually by age 30, he's at, you know, Trilateral Commission. I mean, that's a huge rise. You know what I mean? To be age 30 and be doing that. And Bannon even asked him something like, why were they interested in you? You're just some random Jewish kid from wherever. Like, how did you get up there that quick? And he said, well, I had a skill and an ability to explain fractional reserve banking, right? Which is also a criminal operation, the fiat Federal Reserve and all that. So he basically just, and it's funny too, because in the interview, Bannon, it sounds like Bannon doesn't even understand what that is. Like, he's not even aware of like the, it's bizarre interview, but yeah. So that's, I think, what Epstein is he's one of these international crime consultant, PhD in criminal stuff. And if you think about the mafia and the past podcasts we've done on organized crime and the mafia, several figures within the mob were that way. Lucky Luciano, for example, he went to Meyer Lansky to help get the Sicilian mafia structured in America by the way and the mindset that Meyer Lansky had. So Meyer Lansky actually structured the mafia even for the Italians in the US, and that's well known now. Okay. So I think I would say Epstein's kind of like a Meyer Lansky kind of character. Yeah, that's what I think.
Okay. Now it's, and this is why I wanted to talk to you, because you're so well versed in this sort of geopolitical, I can't think of the name of it, like, Trilateral Commission, Club of Rome, like all these sort of organizations that I've heard over the years. Bill Cooper talked about it a bunch. Mm-hmm. For some reason, when I went down my journey of like, okay, I'm really going to pursue this to try to understand all this stuff, like, that's not the aspect that seemed exciting to me. Like, I've always been interested in occult stuff and symbolism and things, but now I'm seeing the value in it, in the sense of, I think I have to understand how these pieces come together. And there is, how do I say this? I've started looking at some of the ideas presented by so many theorists before me, like the protocols document, you're picking up what I'm putting down. And those are things that I never wanted to look at, not because I was like, oh, that can't be right. But it was more of like, yeah, but like, what's the fruit that this thing bears? I'm going to tell everybody, yeah, there's this group that runs the world. They're the evil ones. And then what happens? Then it sort of makes for sort of like a bad environment, and people maybe will take that message to go too far with it and go against the wrong people that are just like trying to live their lives. But now that all this stuff's happening with Epstein, and we know there's a clear link, right, from Epstein over to a certain area. And now I'm like digging into all this stuff. I mean, I've got some wild content I'm consuming that is very heavily slanted. Like, you ever hear of the Europa documentary? It's like 10, 12 hours.
Yeah. I would say also, there's some issues with Europa, particularly, Keith Woods at his website has done a really detailed breakdown of all the specific areas where Europa kind of gets stuff wrong. Oh, and the perfect. Reason that's Thank relevant. You. Yeah, the reason that's relevant is that I've actually been engaging in quite a few debates lately with some of the people from that domain. Because what a lot of people do is like, they say, oh, well, not that you're saying this, but like, people think, oh, wait a minute, if I've been lied to about everything, then maybe Tiny Mustache Man was a good dude. I don't buy that. I know you're not saying that, but like, that's what a lot of people are flipping over to and thinking, oh, that's got to be the answer, because it's just dialectics. And that's why I've been arguing with a lot of those people lately that, no, it's the same banking elites that funded World War II. And I think there's a significant amount of information that proves that. You're right. It's not that interesting. It's not as sexy as sex magic or whatever, you know, content. It's kind of boring at times, but it's necessary because, not everybody at that level is a wizard in the sense of like being into Crowley. Many of them are, but I don't think they all are. And so, you know, the in my view, the occult / cult side of the pyramid, it's one key important angle on it all. And at the end of the day, I think, yeah, there is kind of a satanic conspiracy at the tip top. It's ultimately a demonic thing. But from the human level down, I mean, it really does tend to constantly go back to international corporations and international banks. I mean, that's kind of at the tip top. That's, I don't think there's any question about that. And banking necessarily will involve, especially in the history of Western civilization, the Rothschilds. You just can't get away from it. Now, they're not the only family that's powerful and important here, but you can verify from even top Kabbalistic scholars. I read several books from Gershom Scholem, and he wrote a book called From Frankism to Jacobinism, which is about Jacob Frank and the Sabbateans and their influence on certain movements like the French Revolution, the Jacobins. So if you ask about some of these more doubted historical documents like the proto, you know what calls, my opinion of that is that I don't know the veracity or the provenance of those documents, but I do think that there is an underlying sort of plan. And a very similar document to this is when they discovered Bishop's documents, right? And the reason that matters is because, I mean, we don't exactly know 100% if Adam Bishop himself wrote, you know, the plan for global world communism and socialism, but there is that plan, right? So I don't even have to know, like, it really, the veracity of the document itself is ultimately not that important if there is actually a movement and a plan to do this. You know what I'm saying? So it could be, you know, some of those documents could be legit. I don't know. I haven't done any kind of textual analysis of that, because from my vantage point, I've always tried to focus on the global elite books themselves. And so if I can see in geopolitical texts from Brzezinski, from Kissinger, from Rockefeller, if I go into the Rothschilds biographies and I find them admitting everything, I don't really need to go to a conspiracy document to say, well, maybe it's true. No, it's true from their actual books. I think that's a lot more effective. And that's why, you know, I kind of appreciate Whitney's book, because she doesn't delve a whole lot into like speculations. Although, to make one important point about the occult, Leslie Wexner, who seems to be very close to Epstein, and Epstein seems to be a money manager of some sorts, whatever that exactly means, for Wexner, who had the Victoria's Secret clothing empire, you know, all throughout the 90s, 2000s, et cetera, all those brands that everybody knows from the 90s and 2000s, like Abercrombie and Fitch, that's all, you know, Wexner stuff. That was also another way that they were getting the supermodels in and doing, like, with, if you look at Nygaard, like literal Derek Zoolander stuff.
Yeah, like, right.
They're like Zoolander shit on these supermodels. It's crazy. Anyway, you know, Whitney's book, when it gets to Wexner, he's in interviews saying that he's possessed by a Dybbuk. Have you seen that?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, that was crazy. In fact, when I read that in her book, I was like, that surely he didn't really say that. He did. So, yeah, go ahead.
Well, one time when I went to Vegas, they had, so Ghost Adventures, they did an episode with the Dybbuk box. I don't know if you've seen that one. It was the one with Post Malone, right?
Okay.
And who I think, by the way, I think there's a photo of Post Malone that they're claiming is part of the Epstein files. I haven't tracked that down to see if that's true or not. Yeah. It's not him doing anything bad, but he's supposedly in it. And that could just be BS you see on social media. Yeah. There's so much BS going around right
now. There is a lot of crap going around.
Yeah. And, On the I don't remember if it was on the Ghost Adventures episode or a different thing I watched about the Dybbuk box, but I believe the one that Zach Bagans has in his museum, and I didn't go in the room because I went through the house through the haunted museum tour, but there was a couple rooms me and my wife were like, I'm not going in there, and one of them was the Dybbuk box room. And that Dybbuk box he has on the back of it, it's got the Kabbalistic Tree of Life inside the box. Which is curious to me, right? Because it's just, that's a strange thing to have with this sort of possessed box that he supposedly had, that possessed his mind. And that was like another question I have for you is, with the Epstein files, have you seen anything that proves, you know, satanic? I know a lot of people were making a big deal about the ball stuff, like, because he had this bank account and it says BAA1, and people are like, oh, that means ball, that means Moloch. But then there, you know, the debunk of that as well, there's a BAA2, BAA3, yeah. And so on. I guess it's a certain kind of account you can have. I don't really understand, but have you seen anything that suggests that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, these guys are typo. I don't think the case here necessarily hinges on that. Like I said, in the Bannon interview, he does specify that he's into esoteric stuff. As you said, the book list has multiple Crowley OTO type stuff on his, I think it's only 5 books on there, but one of them relates to sex, magic, and tantra from Crowley. You know, it's hard to know exactly what the code language is with the beef jerky and the tuna and the seafood, those were all really bizarre. It's also odd in terms of the frequency to talk about this like hundreds of times is really, really bizarre. I suspect that's code language. I don't know 100%, but I suspect it is. Now, what exactly it's code language for, it's hard to say. It could be a lot of people haven't even considered the fact that, well, if he is getting rid of bodies, let's say that that's involved here, and that's why he bought the sulfuric acid in large quantities or whatever. Well, he could also be involved in organ trafficking. This is a huge market. It's very lucrative. He seems to be a person kind of like Bill Gates or other, you know, philanthropist investors. They just kind of throw their money all around to see what hits and what doesn't. So he seems to be involved in that Zorro Ranch stuff, like cloning, genetic engineering, studying all that stuff, perhaps baby farming like John of God's cult was, creating broods, et cetera, to experiment on. That's a possibility. Did you see the request for Mormon blood? I thought that was pretty bizarre. Yeah. Or somebody was saying they were going to send him Mormon blood.
Yeah, that was a weird one. Really
bizarre was, go ahead.
I was going to say, that was a weird one. I just talked about, I've been doing more of the Epstein breakdowns on breaking social norms with my wife because the content on my occult symbolism show is kind of like booked. So I kind of hit the latest greatest over there. And we were talking about, there's a bunch of theories of JonBenet Ramsey being involved in this Epstein stuff. And I kind of went into deep dived it and looked for some connections. And the sort of short version is there are some connections with Boulder, Colorado, where this happened. Right. So yeah. I found a Forbes article that said Epstein was in Zorro Ranch in 1996. That was the year Ramsey was killed. And Zorro Ranch is only 5-6 hours from Boulder. Now, on top of that, there's emails between Epstein and Kimball Musk, Elon Musk's brother. And Kimball lives in Boulder. I don't know for a fact he was living there in 96. He may or may I didn't track that down that far. But there's like weird emails between him and Kimball. And then on top of that, there was this weird, you ever heard of the Divine Madness running cult? It's this weird cult run by a guy named, I think his name is, like the Source family has Father Yod. This guy's name is like Yo, just Y-O. And it was this running cult. They were from Boulder, Colorado, and they got linked. They were on that email with the Mormon blood email, and they ended up moving from Boulder, Colorado down to next to Zorro Ranch. So there's a lot of I didn't find anything conclusive to prove, because, you know, there's the photos of JonBenet Ramsey supposedly, right?
Yeah, and then I saw another attempt at making an association between whatever company that JonBenet's dad worked for. There was because it's like a defense contracting thing, and then there was an alleged association between that and Epstein, but I didn't go too deep down that rabbit hole because I was so focused on all this other stuff. That I did mention, though, that I suspect there would probably end up being connections to some of the famous serial killer cases, because I think some of those serial killers had connections to organized crime. And, you know, kind of like Dan McGowan's thesis is that there's other killers involved. They're not just lone gunman killers like Oswald or whatever. I wouldn't be surprised if eventually there isn't interconnections with Epstein stuff too, because this is such an international, multi-layered crime operation that's like involved in everything. That's the craziest part, is how much stuff it's involved in. I mean, if you think of it, there's some, you know, I mean, he's interested in getting certain things in the Call of Duty Black Ops game to get people addicted to like spending the virtual currency.
Really?
I mean, the dude's involved in like everything. It's just crazy, right? He puts money into trying to get into Bitcoin very early on. By the way, I don't believe he co-opted Bitcoin. Bitcoin's like email. It's like a protocol. They'd be like saying like DARPA created the internet and email, so internet and email is evil. And it's like, yeah, you can people try to buy and get into things. It doesn't necessarily mean it's evil. I mean, he's had his fingers in everything. So, yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see what else comes out, because I suspect people will just spend the next 10 years digging through this stuff, kind of putting together connections to things that we wouldn't have dreamed. And again, somebody was already saying that in the case of, for example, John Wayne Gacy, some of the people that Gacy was working with, because it turns out now that even WGN out of Chicago has reported on confirmed associates and other killers that Gacy was connected to. So he was connected to the Candyman, And he was connected to that whole Clown and Candyman podcast series you probably heard over the years. But Paskey and Norman, there's somebody was saying that they dug up connections between even the Epstein network and John Norman, who was trafficking the young boys. So Epstein doesn't seem to be interested in boys. He seems to be more interested in females and young females. But again, if the information turns out to be correct when it comes to the beef jerky and the seafood and the tuna references, if that ends up being about human cannibal stuff, or if that ends up being about organ trafficking, then I think we're verging into full on, the satanic, because I don't know what else to call that.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, regardless of whether or not they're sort of bowing down to a statue of the goat with the bobs, it is what it is.
Yeah, though, right? I think so. I did that 3D tour. We did one of the live streams we did was where you can do a 3D tour of his New York mansion. And I didn't notice any. I mean, there was a lot of predator prey artwork. So have you seen what's the first of the Red Dragon Cannibal Lecter movies?
One from the 80s. Silence of the Lambs.
No, the one before it. Manhunter.
The original, no, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, you should watch that. The original one is Manhunter, because it, and that whole series, by the way, touches on a lot of the esoteric satanic stuff, because in the new Hannibal TV series with Mads Mikkelsen, it's weird because Jamie and I were watching that series as all the Epstein stuff was coming out. And I'm like, dude, I said, watch this turn into like Hannibal stuff. Watch it be like Hannibal, like just, and it may, I mean, this looks like that's where it's going. But it's funny because in the series, I don't want to spoil it, but Hannibal is a like MK Ultra psychiatrist who's basically getting other serial killers and people that are he's basically getting his traumatized patients and kind of mind controlling them into becoming serial killers. Yeah. Wow. So he's like a handler, like Phoenix Program, like teaching them and goading them and kind of leading them into becoming like him. And I'm thinking, man, this is like Epstein, like the way that they seem to recruit people and bring them in and like test to see how far they can get them to do how much degrading stuff. Cause then they know, you know, the more degrading stuff, like you're owned. You know what I mean? It's kind of like the mafia. You're making your bones, right? Sacrifice behind the mic. You know that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's it's funny because people have been telling me to watch Under the Silver Lake for years, and I finally watched it last year, and I have all my notes, and I was ready to record it. And today, when I was like prepping for our thing, I was looking at your sort of recent stuff on your page, and I saw you had it under the Silver Lake.
We redid it. Yep.
Yeah, and I'm going to listen to it, but I want to finish recording my notes so I can like make heads or tails. But I don't know if you know, so you might have covered this, but in Under the Silver Lake, when he goes to when he's looking at the zines, there's another zine that talks about the cult of the whale and the people that are, and it says like it's people that are into trade and finance, and then sort of off the side you see this thing about human trafficking stuff. I mean, they buried so much stuff in this movie that it's, and there's even a cannibalism scene in that movie. So I mean, I don't know, the problem with the Epstein Files is now it's got my brain working on overdrive, and I almost want to like revisit everything and say, well, this had a little more validity than I even gave it credit for, right? Like the Kurt Barker book. I remember I did a review on the Kurt Barker book, and I said, I don't know, this seems a little nutty, but there was a scene in the movie Fresh that it just, the temple room in the movie Fresh was, which is all about eating people. There's a scene that is basically described by Kurt Barker's book before the movie came out. And I thought, well, that couldn't be a coincidence unless they used it as a source material.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when it's people's firsthand testimonies like that, like, you know, we can't know for sure if that's what happened, unless, you know, some kind of court case or something comes out or evidence comes out that can corroborate. So it's always just firsthand testimony, but they can be insightful and they can be correct because they may have gone through that. I mean, if Epstein is doing this at an international industrial scale, which he seems to be doing, even if it's not eating people, like all the other stuff that's enough. Even if it's only half of it or a third of what, like that's crazy enough. And that confirms most of the main points of the, you know, conspiracy stuff that we've talked about for so long. And I think, you know, from my vantage point, it's like, it's always been the case that what's really going on is in the real, is in the books, the real books, and it's in the movies. And the movies don't always tell you the whole story, but they will portray it in a symbolic or a coded, sometimes in an outright way, and then sometimes in a kind of deceptive disinformation way. So I think you're right to look at things like Under the Silver Lake, and I think I didn't even notice the trafficking part that you're talking about. I do remember, I think my revisit of this recently, it's a much better analysis than we did back in 2018 or whenever we first did it. So because I paid a lot more attention this time. But Jamie and I are about to go back through Eyes Wide Shut. We're revisiting it as well after, I think, yeah, it's been about 10 years since I've done Eyes Wide Shut. So it's nice to go back to some of these classics in the movie realm, right, as well. And like I said, like these old movies like Manhunter, you know, I was talking about Epstein's mansion. There's a lot. He seemed to be really obsessed with artwork that was predator prey, obviously underage looking people. When you do the virtual walkthrough, it's all blacked out, so you're not like seeing that actual stuff, but you can tell that it's, you know, artwork that is just gross. But and then artwork that seems to be very reminiscent of Man Ray. So I was talking about, you know, the Black Dahlia case and Man Ray's connection to association of George Hodel, the first, you know, Hollywood ritual murder case, and with Elizabeth Short and all that being kind of cut and put into this, you know, bull sort of look. Her torso is put into a bull form. And Epstein even had some surrealist art that literally looks just like Man Ray. It might even be a Man Ray piece, I don't know. But yeah, I'm just saying that, like, you can tell some of the proclivity. And people notice this back with the Podesta stuff, right? With the artwork that the Podestas were into, they even had a body that was sort of twisted in the exact form of the way that Dahmer would twist the bodies, right? Mm-hmm. That was in the Washington Post. So all that just to say that, yeah, you can tell, you know, when people's proclivities, when they're into really just sick stuff, like, yeah, that's going to go along with all the rest of the stuff. I'm not trying to read too much into the art, but I'm just saying, like, you know, if he's into predator prey and he's into this really nasty stuff, I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not going to be surprised if they don't have a, you know, fixation with, you know, because if it's predator prey, predators eat their prey.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And by the way, cannibal, many of the serial killers have been cannibals. Dahmer, Gary Heidnik, who's almost as bad. You could argue Heidnik's maybe even worse than Dahmer. I mean, dude was absolutely psycho. He's one of the most famous serial killers, huge cannibal. And we know that in the Phoenix program, they weren't just training serial killers. They were actually also making them cannibals. According to Doug's Valentine. So I wouldn't be surprised if any of that turns out to be confirmed.
Do you think there's any chance that the Epstein files is a psyop of some kind, and this is just some kind of extension of the QAnon thing? And there, I mean, because it is the perfect distraction. Like, I literally can't really think about much else, and I can't help but think, man, what are they doing over here? I don't know. I don't think it is
because it's so damaging to, you know, places in the Middle East. It's so damaging to, you know, Trump himself consistently saying, let's get past this. Everybody wants to move past this. I mean, they wouldn't be saying that if this was just some distraction. However, it could be the case that in the long term, the conspirators believe that this might just normalize this type of stuff, right? Yeah. Especially the underage type stuff. And the reason for that is that, you know, these are technocratic, intelligent people, the really evil people. So they know that when there's a giant scandal like this, that it might even begin over time to actually normalize stuff. So people might become desensitized to it. Now, I'm not saying that it shouldn't come out because of that. I think these people need to be, you know, in some way brought to justice. This stuff is just horrendous. But, hopefully it won't have the effect of desensitizing or normalizing any of this degeneracy.
Yeah, I've seen the theories about this sort of like revelation of the method, the Carnelian right. law. And I don't know, man. I don't know what to think. Like I said, my mind is pretty scrambled right now, and I'm pretty confused on what to think. One thing I did learn about myself is that I've been hard on a lot of conspiracy people, man. I've been hard on Alex Jones. I got to edit that out of here. I've been hard on Alex. I've been hard on Ian Carroll. And that's like my paranoia getting the best of me. Cause like, I'll hear things that I'm like, no, I think that's an op. Right. Mm-hmm. And now I'm like, what's funny is in light of the files, now I'm kind of like, okay, like maybe I don't know as much as I thought I knew, because I thought a lot of the stuff that I had researched that I would cover, and I would even say, hey, let's talk about this interesting thing. I don't know that this is true. It seems a little sensational. Mm-hmm. And now my mind is all scrambled up, and now I'm like, oh man, I think I need to go back to the beginning of like all this geopolitical stuff and like some of the books you've been tearing into, and I need to sort of understand more about the big players involved.
Yeah, because like you said, like, and like we were saying earlier, you know, the occult esoteric stuff is a very important angle on all this, but also that's just kind of one side of the pyramid, you could say, because you've also got, you know, banking corporations that are the ones that really set up the structures that run the world, right? CFR, Trilateral, and then beyond that, you know, the International Bank for National Settlements is really important. Vatican Bank, which, by the way, as far as I can tell, like, nobody else talked about the Vatican Bank in Epstein but me. I've been hammering that hardcore the last 2 weeks, because he seemed to have a very intimate knowledge of the workings of the Vatican Bank, such that he's telling other bankers like Larry Summers under Clinton how it works. So, and then I think to understand, you know, espionage and how and what spies actually do was something that we focus on quite a bit over here on my channel. That really helps understand, like, you know, if I was to say one book that outlines that in a couple hundred pages is Viktor Ostrovsky's book By Way of Deception, because he lays out Israel's philosophy as himself a Mossad guy. He lays out the Israeli philosophy of espionage and geopolitics. And I think it's pretty obvious that Epstein was at some level working for the Mossad, but also for the CIA. He was flying CIA planes for like 2 decades. Like, how? Like, you know, as Whitney Webb shows in her book that he even had it after, I think, being convicted. Like, he had like State Department, like, ability to go and fly and do stuff anywhere. So I think, you know, it's a high level person, higher than most people thought, doing things nobody else would have thought, even perhaps beyond what even Whitney Webb thought in her book, because so much more has been confirmed and come out. But you got to understand the geopolitics side of it, because what you're talking about with like disinformation, and I thought day one QAnon was disinformation. Made videos right away saying I thought it was fake. And remember, disinformation doesn't mean that everything that's coming out is fake, right? Because they mix the fake with the true to make the disinformation more palatable. That's the whole purpose. So I think that what was going on with pizza, you know what, I think that was, there was some nefarious activities going on, maybe CP type stuff. And perhaps worse, you know, that was never proven, but it didn't look like that might be what that kind of operation was. And a lot of those Podesta emails, a lot of the WikiLeaks emails were, you know, almost like a PG version of what we're seeing in the Epstein files. So I think that the Epstein files were like the rated R version or the NC-17 X-rated version of what we saw in Podesta and WikiLeaks emails and Hillary's emails too, by the way. So it's just confirmed, it's like another layer level above that stuff confirming. You know, it's way worse than those leaks.
So like the last time we talked, you recommended I read a paper by Cass Sunstein, one of Obama's people.
Cognitive infiltration.
What?
The one about cognitive infiltration.
Yeah. And basically the gist of it is that the best way to combat conspiracy theories is, I want to say the conclusion was the best way to infiltrate it is to insert actors into that world to like poke holes in the theories or to cast doubt on different things. And I think that paper was written in 2008. Mm-hmm. And I think about that. I think about all the history of, you know, Gamergate with Steve Bannon and Epstein with 4chan and Pepe the Frog. And I look at all, and then Q and the Q drops. And I just, like, I look at all that, and that put this weird amount of paranoia in me that I started like I said it before, and it's like, I would only trust people that were in this space pre-pandemic, right? Which is only a handful of people. And now I'm kind of like, I'm shifting my ideas, and I'm like, okay, maybe I'm being like too hard on people and like not trusting enough. Cause like with Ian Carroll, I always pick on Ian Carroll, right? But cause I have a lot of questions about how this guy got so big so fast. Sure. I have a million questions. But like I've always said, like his research and his presentation is great. So like, I don't have a problem with him per se. I'm always paranoid. I'm like, is this part of some op? And my thought about the op that would be is being reinforced by what I see on social media. If you go on social media, you'll find a lot of content that, I'm going to be careful with my language here, content that says, hey, the boogeyman is from, you know, this country over in the Middle East. And I remember thinking, like, that's crazy that this is all over the place now. Like, this is stuff that you used to get torched for, and now it's everywhere. And, you know, and Ian Carroll, he's very outspoken about all this stuff. And I think, gosh, if I did this, I feel like I would get kicked off of every platform there is. But then I think, you know, because of all my paranoid thinking of all those things I laid out, I think this is all a plot to see who is going to take the bait to talk about this thing so that, I don't know, they can do some kind of ultimate censorship of that or something. Yeah. I just don't know.
I mean, that's a valid line of argument and thought. I've thought the exact same thing. Like, are they just trying to bait everybody to see who's going to come out of the woodwork to talk about this kind of stuff? And then they got a record of everybody who's, yeah. I mean, I've thought that too. But I also think at the same time, it's like, well, but there's also a lot of people actually realizing these things. So, I don't trust the government. I don't trust anybody in the government, even though I might have said over the years, like, okay, it's great if Putin does this. It's bad if Putin does that. Great if Trump does this. Bad if he does that. I've always been, I mean, I quit caring about politics after like the Ron Paul era. I was like, okay, this is not really, doesn't really achieve much. Like, I mean, maybe at a local.
I'm getting there too.
Yeah. Maybe at a local level, you could do some good doing politics or something, but like national politics, I mean, unless you're a lobbyist or you have hundreds of millions of dollars or a billionaire, like you're not really going to affect much at the internet, the, you know, presidential national level. So, I think it's valid to consider that, but I think when you've got like, you know, Thomas Massie and people like that really pushing to have this stuff come out, I mean, and the president's against him, it's like, I don't care about like Massie being good or bad. I'm just saying, like, that to me signifies that there's a real awakening and people really figuring out like who's really controlling the West, our government, et cetera. I don't think it's just Middle Eastern people, but they have a huge power and influence, and they have for a long time.
Okay, I got one more little question for you here. The tragedy, and so when I started a few months ago saying, man, I think I need to understand this geopolitical stuff that I don't really have a lot of interest in. One of the books that seems to be one of the Bibles of this is Tragedy and Hope by Carol Quigley. Yep. It's a massive book, and I know you've done a series of lectures on this book. Is that the best place to start? And do I need to track down the first edition that costs, I don't know, $500 or whatever it is?
I mean, no, you can get the one that's the blue cover. It's fine. To my knowledge, there's not missing stuff. I mean, all the juicy details are in the copy that I have. But really, Tragedy and Hope is just kind of the big master volume that Quigley wrote. And he was a CFR archivist, so he was kind of working from the Council on Foreign Relations own personal archives. And he says in the book, like, they let me in because I'm a member of the CFR. I'm a big supporter of it. They let me into the archives to write their history of the 20th century. So remember, it's not a conspiracy book. It's an apologetic for the establishment. And he was Bill Clinton's mentor at Georgetown. So he's a military historian, right? So he's not like a billionaire or a banker or whatever, but he was an academic at Georgetown, brought into the establishment. And the whole thesis of the book is just basically the tragedy of the 20th century is the two world wars, which the bankers basically had a huge role in being involved in. And then the hope is that democratic liberal capitalism will save the world. That's basically the thesis of it. So the book is about, from a geostrategic standpoint, the Anglo-American Atlanticist establishment taking out in the 20th century their two rivals, namely the Austro-Hungarian Empire, which was Catholic, and Russia, which was Orthodox and Tsarist. Those two powers needed to go away for the Anglo-American establishment to have dominance. So he wrote that in the 1960s, and he's writing before you had more influence from APAC and Middle Eastern people. So it's not that he's denying that, it's just before they had a huge amount of influence in the US government. A better, easier book to start with from Quigley is his other book, Anglo-American Establishment, because he wrote that in 1982. And he said, this book is actually going to be about the pyramid itself and the Atlanticist establishment. And he starts with Rothschilds. He goes into the Fabian Society. He goes into their networks, how this all comes out of Cecil Rhodes and the British Empire. Cecil Rhodes being basically a legate or an attaché of the Rothschilds, just like Jeffrey Epstein seems to be a legate or attaché of the Rothschilds. By the way, there's some other books that make some good arguments that my publisher just put out a book about who funded Tiny Mustache Man. There's some really good chapters on J.P. Morgan, perhaps also being a front for the Rothschilds in the U.S., because a lot of people don't think that the Rothschilds didn't have any influence in America. It was just the Rockefellers. But if J.P. Morgan is a front for the Rothschilds, that's actually another angle on this. But
okay.
Anyway, so Anglo-American Establishment would actually be an easier book to start with. It's more readable, and it just gives you the outline of who is in power in the West. And he wrote that before he died in 1982. And it's just basically a shorter, like 200-page version of Tragedy and Hope. But if you want to go into all the juicy details of Tragedy and Hope, go for it.
That's great advice. Yeah, I'll start that as less intimidating.
It's tedious.
Okay. Now, you talk about your book publisher. So you've got the Esoteric Hollywood series. The latest drop is Esoteric Hollywood 3, dropped October 25. What can we expect to read in that when we pick that up?
Yeah. So in one, just brief overview, like I would focus on directors, and we did about 60, 80 pages per director. You know, you got a Spielberg, you got a Kubrick, obviously, Hitchcock, all that kind of stuff. And then we talked about Bond a little bit. In the second one, I focused on themes. So it's like organized crime in Hollywood, transhumanism in Hollywood, MKUltra in Hollywood, weather modification in Hollywood movies. So it's kind of a wild one. And then the third one, I wanted to include more. So there's actually way more movies. And instead of like 20 page essays on one movie, it's like 5-page essays on more movies. Cause a lot of films you don't need a 20 page essay. Right. And I wanted to include them in there. Cause you might have a movie that's like a B movie that has some really interesting, fascinating element in it, but it's not worth a whole, 20-page analysis. So there's a whole section, for example, on occult B movies that had some pretty profound Crowleyan themes, mind control themes. So like 18th Angel with Rachel Lee Cook, that's one of her first films that she was ever in. Really wild satanic abuse cloning in the Roman Catholic Church. Yeah, it's a really wild one. We've got movies with early Drew Barrymore films that had a lot of MKUltra weird stuff, kind of obscure TV movies that she's in, weird ones like Doppelganger. There's quite a few. I finally got to David Cronenberg, so I went through a lot of the Cronenberg esoterica that I'd never really covered in the past. But more so outside of the B movies, it's Marvel for the first 60 pages, 70 pages, because people have been saying, how come you haven't covered the Marvel movies? Where's the, that's been so huge in the last 20 years in terms of cultural influence and mind control. So I finally buckled down and did about 60 pages of Marvel stuff. I hit a lot of dystopian films that I never got into in terms of like the Mad Max series and the recent Mad Max, Gnostic goddess savior archetype. That's another theme that I put into this book and how that ties into feminism. And then towards the end of the book, there's a whole section on, I think I called it Hollywood Hollywood Horror Trauma Alchemy. And I went back and found that some of the earliest black and white silent films that were created were actually about Crowley. Did you know that?
No, I've heard of like, I think it's called Night of the Demon that was about Crowley, but that's not what I knew.
Way earlier than, that's like 50s. Yeah, so I think I can't remember if I mentioned Night of the Demon, but the villain in that is based on Crowley, you're correct. But no, all the way back to like the 20s. So there's one of them is called The Mysteries of Myra. And I forget the name of the other one off the top of my head, but so I went all the way back.
Man, those are deep cuts.
It blew me away that like some of the earliest serials, which is where they would do like a little, you know, 8-minute silent picture that was part of the story. And then the next one was the next 8 minutes of a silent movie story. Some of the earliest serials were about Crowley. Isn't that crazy?
Wow. I had no idea, dude. Yeah, that's great, man.
Now they're hard to watch. You can watch it and kind of make some of it out, but it's so grainy and like low quality. It's and some of the footage has actually been lost. So it's hard to know exactly what, but it is, there's two, one of them, in fact, one of them, Crowley said that he himself hated the portrayal. Like it was really early. I forget exactly when he died, but do you remember when he died?
Yeah, December of 47.
Okay, Crowley, so he'd seen these and he was like, one, I think he liked one of them, and then he might have even consulted on Mysteries of Myra, but then the other one, which portrayed him as the villain, he hated it. I forget the name of
that's
it.
That's a trip, man.
Yeah.
All right. Definitely scooping out. Are you still selling movies?
Yeah.
Are you still selling signed copies on your website of the Esoteric Hollywood series?
Yep.
Okay, all cool.
JasonAlsis.com.
Perfect. Okay, and I'll put a link in the show notes. Last thing, what's next for Jay Dyer? I know you've got a million appearances lined up, probably, right? What else you got going on?
Yeah, I mean, we're hoping for some big stuff in 2026. Maybe some big podcasts. We'll have to wait and see. I'll be doing a lot of the previous podcasts that you've seen me on. I'm going to be doing again Timcast pretty soon, I think, and then probably have some more debates. We just did a big debate last night with a kind of a Neoplatonic Gnostic-ish type of dude. Since part three is out, I don't know if I'm going to be writing anything in 2026. I kind of got burnt out after writing Esoteric Hollywood 3, but if I do another book, it will probably be something geopolitics and espionage related, trying to tie in cults and stuff. Oh, another thing in part three, by the way, I forgot to mention, is I went into some of the spies or some of the A-listers who were spies, which I had not actually covered yet. So I thought that was worth putting into Esoteric Hollywood, obviously. So there's a chapter on
Tom Cruise, a spy?
Well, I did find one article where Tom Cruise, after 9/11, went to the CIA and said, I want to promote and do promos for you guys. So I didn't find a specific, you know, agent type of thing, but he did do promo stuff, kind of like Jennifer Garner did. So that exists. Okay. But no,
I could see it, though. I could see Tom Cruise being a spy because, I mean, the guy is, I mean, he does all those action stunts. I mean, the guy is like a cut above normal people, like something's going on there.
Yeah. And speaking of Hollywood, I don't know if you know who Dasha Nekrasova is, but I just did an interview with her, and she made a movie years ago called Scary of 61st. It was her first kind of horror, her first written and directed film. And it was pretty spot on with what all she predicted ish about Epstein.
Wow.
So that's a pretty wild film. And we did an interview the other day. Anyway, so we did more interviews with hopefully people from Hollywood. I've been talking to Vivian Kubrick quite a bit. We've had some, you know, phone conversation type stuff going on. So I'm trying to get her. That's She's cool. Almost going to do an interview with Vivian very soon.
Nice, dude. Yeah. She doesn't believe that Kubrick filmed the fake moon landing, right?
No.
Okay.
No, well, I've never, that's Jay Wiedner's theory. So that's not my theory.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Well, tell the people where they can find you.
Yeah. You can go to jasonalsis.com and subscribe there. Check out all the archive stuff. You can find me under my name on YouTube, Jay Dyer. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, just my name. And then also been writing for the Sam Hyde Show. So doing some comedy stuff too, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah, dude, that's cool, man. Yeah, we need to maybe in 27 link up, do another live lecture, man. That was the highlight of my year doing that with you. Okay. So, and thanks for coming back on, man. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, anytime.
All right, there you go. That was the interview with Jay Dyer. So if you want to get more from Jay, be sure to follow him. I put all the links in the show notes. You can get his Esoteric Hollywood series from jaysanalysis.com, right? and also posted a bunch of links from previous interviews we've done over the years. You can also catch him on, Voldemort show, The Name That Shall But Not Be Named. You can catch him on that show as well. He's all over the place. My man's doing crazy interviews everywhere. The dude's really busy right now, so I appreciate him spending some time with us. So also, another quick caveat. The next episode, the ones I'm working on furiously in the background, is Under the Silver Lake Film Analysis. It's looking like it's going to be a two-parter. It's just too much information. So be sure to watch Under the Silver Lake, and you can follow writings. I'm obviously going to plot spoil, right? And I'm going to obviously do the video version of the show, and I've had problems with YouTube allowing me to put any movie clips at all. I don't know how these other channels get away with it. They'll put, like, just tons of movie clips. I can't put 1 second of audio, video. I mean, I'll try it. It almost always kicks it back and gives me copyright flags. So the YouTube version of Under the Silver Lake probably won't have any film clips in it. So if you want the film clips intact, you're going to have to go tier 2 in the Patreon or VIP section. But, you know, let's see what happens. Maybe it'll let it fly. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. Usually it doesn't. But either way, that's what's coming next. Thank you for listening to the show. Till next time, stay positive.